Welcome to the Lou Catino Show, where we can learn to reimagine our lifestyle.
Dr. Akhil, welcome to our podcast, Reimagine Your Lifestyle. It's a pleasure to have you here. I've read so much about you, and what caught my attention was the kind of work that you're doing in the field of autoimmune disorders. Mm-hmm. And I really like your journey. You know, Harvard physician and then integrative and lifestyle medicine moves into your learning part. I'm good friends with Dr. Andrew Weil as well.
We've had
several conversations because he's, you know, there was a project that he was going to work with us on a cancer score some time ago. We connected. And in fact, he's been after me to do the integrative oncology course that he has. So I saw all of that. But it's always best if you tell our audience, you know, about your journey, you know, what led you to becoming a physician when and all your journey right up till now. We would love to hear.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. So I was born in India and then grew up in Singapore after that. And then I came to the US around high school years. And at that time was when I really fell in love with science and chemistry, biology. And I knew that I wanted to work with people. So that's where my interest in medicine came. But the unconventional path I've taken in terms of integrative medicine actually came from my own illness, which I suffered during medical school with this mystery illness that conventional medicine was not solving for me, despite, you know, physical therapy, prescription drugs. And so I had to actually take a year off to try to recover my health during medical school. And that was when I first began to explore integrative medicine, lifestyle, diet changes. And I just saw the power in my own health. And then I knew I wanted to get trained in that for my future patients.
So you finished your MD and then you studied integrative medicine.
Yeah, exactly. I finished my MD and then I did a residency in family medicine at Stanford. And then I did the fellowship in integrative medicine with Andrew Weil.
Okay, great. That's amazing. You know, I also wanted to ask you that, you know, so integrative and lifestyle medicine worked for you, the changes yourself. How did you start to apply it to the cases that you handled? And what are some of the most common cases that you've been handling? Because I know you've written this book, T-I-G-E-R, Tiger, and I see it's related to autoimmune. So is that something you specialize in, or is that something that you moved in during your journey?
Yes, I do specialize in that. So a lot of my practice is patients with autoimmune disease. But what I found was these same five root causes in that I cover in the Tiger protocol apply to our other chronic diseases like obesity, heart disease, which is still the biggest killer of people worldwide, diabetes, which is now epidemic. So I just saw all of these chronic diseases related to these five factors, and that's why I put them together in the Tiger protocol.
Great. You know, doctor, we've been looking at autoimmune conditions for the last 9 years, and, you know, right from a multiple sclerosis to a Hashimoto's thyroid. And while all of them affect different parts of the bodies, we've also noticed certain commonalities. Like today, you know, there's a certain amount of chronic stress that can cause flare-ups, or a leaky gut that can cause flare-ups, or, you know, a particular like celiac or lactose or a particular food. And something as simple as mineral deficiencies, like a lack of zinc, B12, D3, you know, what are your observations over the years when you look at these commonalities? Because I love your point on how you said these five fundamentals that you talk about in the book are basically the fundamentals of most other diseases, because that's something that we also see. And that's why you're able to look at so many other diseases, keeping the fundamentals in place. What have been your observations when it comes to autoimmune conditions? And, and what are some of the cases that you kind of handle? Like, what autoimmune conditions do you see the most and handle?
Oh, sure. So I, just like you, I have also seen with commonalities in these different autoimmune conditions, like the most common ones I see are rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, Hashimoto's thyroid disease, some multiple sclerosis, and also very rapidly rising is inflammatory bowel disease, which is either ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease. And yeah, you're right. I think the commonalities between all of these different diseases can be traced back to the upstream mechanism, like the original root cause or driver, which often starts in the gut. And that could be related to food or the gut bacteria called the microbiome, which is critically important for the immune system. Plus, I wanted to highlight the role of toxins and environmental toxins contributing to imbalances. And then for sure, stress is a really big driver as well.
Mm-hmm. Doctor, how do you handle that the part of stress? Because, you know, most patients say, hey, Luke, everyone has it. What do we do?
Right.
What are some of your ways and techniques where you've been successful to kind of make patients understand that, hey, this can cause flare-ups? What are some of the tools that you've used?
Oh, yes. Well, I think the research on meditation and neuroplasticity is very exciting because meditation is able to literally make your brain bigger. You know, your hippocampus and other structures actually enlarge. And then in terms of the strategies to address that, I think that meditation is wonderful, but also there's other tools that are helpful, like prayer, gratitude practices, yoga, guided imagery, even psychotherapy or counseling. So I tell people there are a lot of different ways to address stress, and just finding what works for them is really the best.
Absolutely. I love that you talk about prayer, because of late, you know, I've been leaning more towards this word called faith. And whether mm-hmm. someone's religious or spiritual, I just believe that when we're trying to break down worry in our patients, which a lot of them have, worry and anxiety, it somewhere comes from a lack of faith, because some things are uncontrollable. There's nothing we can do about it. But I feel that faith is missing. So I love the fact that you bring up prayer. I also read that you are certified on mind-body, right? You did your... Can you tell us a little bit about that, your studies in that field?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So I wanted to really learn myself a lot of these mind-body techniques. So I took courses in mindfulness-based stress reduction, which is an 8-week program. And then I got trained in mind-body medicine through the Georgetown University. So that was on how to lead patients through hypnosis, guided imagery, guided meditations, and groups where they can support each other to learn these mind-body skills. So all of that I use in my practice today. So.
Okay, great. Doctor, you spoke about toxins, environmental. We know there are toxins that build up in the system and then the toxins around us. In yep. today's world, with the amount of xenoestrogens and, you know, yes. every other environmental toxins, exactly. what are some of the lifestyle tips that you can give us? You know, simple changes that people could start being aware of, because a lot of people don't even, you know yet that plastic water that you can yes. constantly drink is creating a problem. So
right.
we would love your knowledge and your sharings on that.
Yeah, there's, many ways to start. I think filtering the drinking water is often very good because, like you said, you know, a lot of people don't realize plastic water bottles are not the best way to go. And I think a reverse osmosis RO system is probably way to filter the drinking water, remove all the toxins that might be there. And then when it comes to diet, choosing more locally grown food, organic food, eating seasonally, you know, that's a big part of what I recommend. And then with toxins, I think personal skincare products, shampoos, lotions can be a hidden source of toxins. Even cosmetics. So I recommend people look into anything you're putting on your body, anything on your skin, hair, anywhere on the body gets absorbed to some extent. So it's just like you're eating, you know, that. So I think it's very important to look at all the different ways we might be exposed to toxins.
Absolutely. And I think there are a lot of options in the market today where we can make better choices, read labels.
Yes.
And, but I wanted to ask you, you know, when you look at all of your autoimmune patients, and a lot of them have inflammation in the gut through,
yes.
You know, some of them are constipated, some of them have IBS-like symptoms or bloating, gas. You spoke about the microbiome, you know,
yes.
So there's so much on the internet about, you know, prebiotics, probiotics. A lot of our patients, you know, they take probiotics on their own, 50 billion, 75 billion, yes. even 100 billion. And for some yep. of them, we see that their gut actually gets worse. And for some of them,
exactly.
it gets better. But the
yes.
point is, you know, how do you advise people to slowly start their journey into building a healthy gut, a healthy microbiome?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So we like to use foods because, with supplements like probiotics, they can be very strong. And I always recommend taking any supplements under the supervision of your doctor because the wrong probiotic, I've actually seen worsen autoimmune disease or worsen gut health. So food is safe. We like to recommend fermented foods, things like, sauerkraut, yogurt, idli, dosa. A lot of these fermented foods are very healing for the gut. And then one category that I think is under recognized is prebiotic foods, which are foods that feed the good bacteria. They're not probiotic foods like fermented foods with the live bacteria, but prebiotic foods like artichoke, asparagus, actually ground flaxseed is really excellent, chia seed. And then, so in my book, I list, dozens of options for these prebiotic foods, and some of them are surprising. Like one among nuts and seeds, chestnuts are one of the highest sources of prebiotics, and usually that's only consumed in the holiday time in the West, but that's a healthy food to be eaten year round.
Okay, great. And the leaky gut, that's all over the internet today. We see a huge connection between a Hashimoto's and even a vitiligo and leaky gut, most autoimmune conditions. How would you explain it to our audience in the most easiest way? Like, is it really a myth or is it leaky gut? And what are some of the ways that we can start looking to repair this leaky gut?
We know this is a real condition because there's hundreds of research papers now documenting this. And what I would explain to people is that the gut lining is supposed to be like a brick wall, which does not let anything through unless the cells choose to do so. But when you have leaky gut, you can imagine a lot of the bricks go missing, like they start to disappear. You have all these little gaps in the wall, and then things can get through without being supervised, like bacteria or toxins, and they get into the bloodstream that way. And then it's been shown that, those bacteria or toxins can travel to distant organs, kidney, heart, liver, brain, and then cause inflammation, cause damage. So there are a lot of gut healing foods I recommend, like okra, bindi is really excellent for healing the gut. Aloe vera juice, another good option. For any non-vegetarians, bone broth, either fish or chicken is very good. Plus those fermented foods, which have been shown to reduce inflammation and improve gut diversity in the microbiome, which is very important. And then finally, the prebiotic foods, all of those foods that feed those beneficial bacteria.
All right. Do you think stress has an impact on the way we know it has an impact on the way the gut works, especially in cases like IBS? But how would you explain in the simplest way possible the correlation between stress, the gut inflammation, leaky gut, and possible flare-ups in an autoimmune condition?
So I tell people that stress is often one of the initial causes for the manifestation or diagnosis of autoimmune disease, and it's been shown to be one of the drivers for flare-ups. So once a person has a autoimmune illness, and it mostly results through the nervous system, the sympathetic nervous system, which is our fight or flight response, gets activated by stress, and then that leads to a lot of downstream effects like increased inflammation, weight gain, fatigue, immune system dysregulation. So it all gets mediated through the nervous system ultimately.
Okay. Doctor, I like the word you've used detox in your book, the word detox. And I mean that's a word that we were trained on as well. But today you have a lot of people saying, oh, detox can't work. The human body has its own way of, cleaning itself, which is true. But we do
It's
also
true.
know scientifically that there are foods that are able to detox the body. And if there is a toxin overload, we need to detox it. So this word that you talk about, detox, can you explain it and break it down? So a lot of people don't believe in detoxes. They just believe that, hey, I have toxins, my body will take care of it. And it will. It can take care of a certain amount of toxins. But when there's an overload coming in through pesticides, environmental toxins, poor lifestyle, would love for you to talk about that, doctor.
Yes, and I think it's important that we talk about the nuance within this topic because we can't just dismiss all detox as snake oil and not really needed. It is true the body has its own systems, liver, kidney, lymphatics for detox, and then my approach is let's strengthen those, so the body can do better what it's supposed to be doing. So I think I'm kind of taking a middle ground where we are reducing exposure to toxins through our water, food, air, skin products, home environment. So that way we reduce the intake of toxins. And then if we boost the detox, so one of my favorite foods to do that, there's two. One is cruciferous vegetables like broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts. Those are very good for detox. And then the beetroot, so the beetroot and the beet greens, the leafy tops of the beetroot, are excellent for something called methylation, which is one of the ways the liver detoxifies and also supports your glutathione, which is another antioxidant in the liver that's key for detox. So with beets and beet greens and cruciferous vegetables, you can really help your detox.
Right. It makes me sad in our country back in India,
Yes.
people sell the beetroot. They chop off
Yeah.
all the greens and that's just thrown on the side. And,
Correct.
in the villages, that's used even for women who are going through pregnancy because of
Yeah.
the folates. It's one of the most powerful things. But I'm happy you spoke about that beetroot as well.
Yes.
And of course, cruciferous vegetables. I wanted to ask you the impact of obviously processed food and ultra processed, which has become a huge issue.
Yes.
It slows down the liver, it slows down organs which have the natural ability to detoxify. So can you talk a little bit about that and its connection with inflammation as well?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I do think processed foods are a very big issue because we know they're engineered to be hyper palatable and addictive. So it's very real that people struggle with addictions to these processed foods. It's hard to stop eating them. And then they have so many additives, things that we don't recognize, chemicals that cause inflammation, that harm the gut. And so I tell people if they read a label and there's a one ingredient they don't understand or have not heard of, then to not eat that food, because you want to make sure you're having whole foods as much as possible with minimal processing. And I do think it's a big driver of obesity, the chronic inflammation, diabetes, and also autoimmune disease.
Okay, just to move away from the technical parts, doctor, it always fascinates me people's growth stories, and you have one of them. I mean, you went to high school and then Harvard. Tell us a little bit about your journey. What were some of the most challenging parts of your journey, if you had any challenging parts? I know you were unwell during almost a year of your studies, but along
Yes.
the way, because there are so many people aspiring to, get through Harvard or get into med school. Would love for you to, tell us a little bit about your journey, the challenges, everything that you went through, maybe, and how you overcame it.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I think in my own life, now looking back, I see stress really played a role because in high school, it was very stressful, trying to get good grades and take the right exams to get into Harvard. And so for several years, that was stressful. And then once I got to Harvard, even though the environment is very supportive, I really loved all the friends and people that I connected with and still I'm in touch with many of them. I was very self-driven. So even though there was no external pressure, I was really used to pushing myself. So again, for a few years in Harvard, I was really pushing myself, very driven, not getting enough rest or sleep or managing my stress. And then I think that was a key reason why I developed that illness in medical school that then turned my health around, led me to learn about integrative medicine and all of those things. But looking back, yeah, I can see now the chronic stress over high school, college, medical school, it added up. And I learned the hard way that these are real and have a big effect on your body.
So there was a silver lining in that journey for you to make
Yes.
the selection. No, but that's amazing. I'm happy that, you recognize the importance of lifestyle and changes, and you're bringing that out. And we really are going to share your book with the entire audience, because audience loves to read and learn new things. So we're very excited to, you know, go through your book. I also wanted to ask you, what inspired you to become a doctor? What inspires you to do what you do? Yes.
Yeah. So it actually was my, you know, love of learning from a young age. And then I gravitated towards science. I really enjoyed learning about life and animals and humans, how the body worked. I was fascinated by those things. In elementary school, I made a model of the human heart and the circulation of blood, because I thought that was so fascinating. After, you know, falling in love with science, when I got to Harvard, I did some research at Harvard Medical School, like on biochemistry, skin cancer, working in the lab. It was wonderful, you know, really enjoyed it. But then I started missing the human connection. So I knew that I didn't want to just be in a lab. I wanted to work with people. And then it made sense that medicine was the best way to combine both of those interests.
That's amazing. And if you had to categorize your patients today, like, what kind of cases do you see the most of?
Yes. So in addition to all autoimmune diseases, we do see other chronic diseases, diabetes, heart disease. Obesity is a big issue here in the West. So almost everyone I see is dealing with it in some form. And then we'd also see a number of cancer patients to support them after they complete their treatments for cancer, help them recover and prevent recurrence of cancer.
Oh, that's great. So when you reflect sometimes and you see obesity, diabetes, basically people are metabolically unfit because all of these diseases are connected with poor metabolic health. You know, what are the things that come to your mind? Like, you know, back in India, I see stress as a huge driver, because chronic stress changes the way we eat, whether we work out, overtrain, or be sedentary. We see all of those connections coming from there. So what do you see as commonalities? Like, where are we going wrong in the way we live our life today, considering we have so much more? We have information, we have experts everywhere. Yeah, what's your reflection on that, doctor?
Oh, yes. I think that's a very important question, because this is the what I call an evolutionary mismatch, where our genes are really mismatched to our modern lifestyle. So our genes, over millions of years, we lived mostly outside, you know, gathering, hunting foods, living outdoors and getting sunlight, being very physically active, and having to work hard for our food. And in that time, it was very important to be able to store fat for the times when food was scarce. And that has remained in a lot of our physiology. And when we kind of put a person like that in our modern environment with so many, you know, hyperpalatable processed foods and stress and no outdoor time, no sun exposure, no physical activity, then it's like a perfect storm of all the factors that combine to disrupt our health.
Yeah. So you talk about genes, and we know a lot of autoimmune cases are highly genetic. We know, like, young girls who come with vitiligo, their mom has it, the grandmom has it. How do you handle those cases? I mean, because a lot of them come to us and they're like, hey, this is never going to go because my parents had it. But we do also understand, by changing the environment internally and externally, we can see how genes can upregulate and downregulate. Do you see a lot of these genetic cases, and what's your protocol and advice to people when you detect them that their particular condition is genetic, so that they don't give up and they can still make changes to make it better?
Yeah, absolutely. And it is true that some diseases have a bigger genetic component. But even in those cases, we find that we can help shift things by really working on the diet, lifestyle, stress, the environment. Because I think ultimately, the environmental factors are a bigger driver than genes of the health and the immune system. So I tell people there's always hope, even if there is a strong genetic component, to help shift things.
Amazing. I like hearing that from you. Doctor, I wanted to ask you also about, we get this common question of, if my immune system is erratic and it's attacking my body, but it's my thyroid gland, my joints, my skin, then what happens if I'm eating foods, which you take the steroid, they're giving me an immunosuppressant? So how do you handle these cases, and how do you explain the biology, off food that, hey, turmeric is good. Yes, it's great for the immune system, but I can also use it as a food for certain autoimmune protocols. Would love your view on that.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I educate people that with foods, they tend to be more immune modulators, where they can modulate the immune system and they don't stimulate it in a negative way. So even with autoimmune disease, you have some parts of the immune system that are hyperactive and some parts that are underactive. So many times autoimmune people can be prone to infections. So it's more nuanced. It's not that you're just suppressing everything. You want to modulate, you want to boost the innate immunity, you want to fight infections. And so I think that's a balance to keep in mind. And it's different with certain, like if you're using medications or herbs, even sometimes that can stimulate the immune system. So always under supervision, for any of those supplements. But there was an interesting study from Stanford looking at fermented food intake in adults and found that 6 weeks of increasing fermented foods reduced 19 of their inflammation markers and immune dysregulation markers. So powerful effects from food, all in a beneficial way. It's not going to overstimulate.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's amazing. Doctor, what about exercise? Can you talk a little bit about, exercise? What do you advise autoimmune patients to do, or any of your patients who have a problem with their metabolism? What's your take?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So I typically recommend three aspects that should not be ignored. First is cardiovascular. So walking, biking, any type of hiking, heart disease or heart raising activity. That's very important. Ideally, at least a couple of hours every week total, spread out over a few days. Second component is resistance training, which could be either doing body weight exercises at home, like a plank or other things like that, or even yoga can, depending on the asanas, can have resistance component, or you can use weights or gym or resistance bands, a lot of different ways, but that's a very different stimulus to the body than the cardiovascular disease, cardiovascular workouts. So you need to have both. And then finally, something to work on balance, flexibility, and agility, whether that's yoga, Pilates, Tai Chi, any of those practices.
So that's pretty much a holistic approach to exercise. Yep. Everything included. Some of our cases, we surprisingly see that when some patients do an HIIT, like a Tabata or something very intensive for short periods of time, they have flare-ups. And for some people, they don't. So we've also noticed that different body types are, reacting differently to the intensity of the exercise. Some train in a zone 3, they have a flare-up, but in a zone 2, they're absolutely fine. So that's pretty interesting. What about sleep, doctor? What about sleep? What's your take on sleep? Because we see a huge correlation. I'd love your take and your observations and advice on that.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a huge factor. And with sleep, that's part of the rest that I think is essential. And sleep is when our body heals, when it reduces inflammation, repairs cell damage. So if you're not getting enough sleep, your body isn't getting to repair the daily damage that's occurring from routine living. Plus, we know that sleep is very important for healthy metabolism, blood sugar regulation, energy levels. And so for most people, I think they can benefit by trying to get enough sleep. And the criteria I tell people is in the morning when you wake up, you should be well rested. And some people need 6 hours, some people need 8 to 9 hours, but you need to be well rested when you wake up in the morning.
And what are your top three lifestyle tips to people who struggle to get quality deep sleep?
Oh, yes. So I think avoiding the screens and technology for a couple of hours before bed is very important, because the screens have blue light that disrupts our melatonin production. So that's very important. It doesn't appear to be the same with television, where it's at a distance. So that is okay. But as long as it's something relaxing, not, something very stressful. And then secondly, I think timing of meals. So making sure you're not eating too close to bedtime, because that can really contribute to, the poor sleep. And then finally, I think being mindful of alcohol, because many people use alcohol to help them fall asleep, but in the end, it actually worsens the sleep quality for most of the night. So it's not a good tool to help with sleep.
Yeah, I completely agree with you in that. We have a lot of our patients say, hey, I drink and I fall asleep. And I ask them the same question that you do. How do you feel when you wake up? They're like tired. So mm-hmm. I don't think they slept too deeply. Are you a fan of blue blockers? Using blue blockers for people who are probably working on their laptops at night or iPads? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, those are effective ways to minimize the negative effects of the screens. Yep.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, before getting a pair for myself, I was looking at the research, and a lot of research put them down. And I said, let me just try it myself. You know, I mean, there's research and then there's self-realization as well.
Right.
And they work like magic. Like magic. The nights I use a blue blocker, or if I'm using it on flights, long flights like India and New York, there's a huge difference in the quality of sleep. So
exactly.
Doctor, what about, you know, we've seen a lot of patients, you know, some of them are like with an eczema or a vitiligo, they're sensitive to the sun. And some of them thrive in the sun. And I've also noticed this, like we have patients in Canada, when the winter sets in, all their flare-ups happen. And in warmer weather, they're fine. And some people react differently. So I know one of the obvious solutions is like, you know, to try to respect the weather conditions that you're in. But what's your take on this? Because I've personally failed to understand, because I'm a huge fan of sunlight, subcellular melatonin. But it aggravates and it causes flare-ups for some people. What's your take on this?
Yeah, that is a tricky one, because many patients with autoimmune disease have photosensitivity, meaning that they're sensitive to light, especially sunlight or other bright lights, and actually can drive flare-ups like with lupus or vitiligo or other things. I think it's important to remember that one of the main benefits of sunlight is vitamin D production in the body. So if you don't tolerate sunlight, then checking your vitamin D level and then supplementing if it's low is a good way to get a lot of those benefits that we see. Because I think one of the reasons why during the winter we have less immunity is because of reduced vitamin D from sunlight, which contributes to increased risk of like colds and flus as well.
Right. So there is an obvious correlation between our vitamin D3 levels and the immune system.
Yes, strong correlation.
Would you recommend, if they're sensitive towards sunlight, would you recommend them using infrared? You get infrared discs and plates. Yeah, you would?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I'm a big fan of infrared or red light therapy. Yes.
Okay, that makes sense. What about you, doctor? What's your routine? How do you stay fit? How do you stay healthy? I'd love to know that.
For me, you know, I followed the kind of 80-20 rule, where 80% of the time I eat very healthy, and then 20% of the time on weekends or when going out, you know, I have treats or desserts or alcohol or, you know, anything like that. So that prevents the sense of restriction, because then you do have a little bit of flexibility. So I think that moderation is very important for me. And then for me, the biggest game changer, well, two of them. One was managing my stress. So once I learned the effects of that, beginning a daily meditation practice, which I've sustained, has been, you know, so transformative. And then the other game changer is exercise, because I was not very active during high school and college. But then after that, after my illness, I became a lot more tuned in to exercise. And now if a day goes by where I don't exercise, I miss it. And I feel like it's such a, you know, difference in my energy and outlook.
So you prioritize it, you make the time, because a lot of doctors say we don't have time. So it's all about priority.
I mean, you know, even the president of the U.S. has time to exercise. So I think most people can make time.
Yeah, I love that. It's all about priority. Now, I want to go back to your meditation and just get a little into that, because I think it's beautiful what you talk about. You know, meditation is one of the biggest and most successful tools for our patients, kind of, you know, understanding their stress better or kind of calming down, moving from sympathetic to parasympathetic. How long do you meditate for? Is there any particular technique or any particular form of meditation that you embrace?
Yes. For me personally, I follow Paramahansa Yogananda, the guru from India who wrote the book Autobiography of a Yogi, and he teaches Kriya Yoga meditation. So that is the type of meditation that I practice, usually about 30 minutes per day. But for people who are starting, I tell them even starting with 5 minutes or 3 minutes a day, if that's all they can do, and then using apps for guided meditation so they don't have to do it on their own is often very helpful, so that someone is guiding them through those, you know, first days of learning to meditate.
Wow, that's amazing. So what are your future plans now? What do you plan to do? This is your book. This is your first book, right?
This is my second book, actually.
Which is your first book? Can you tell us about your first book?
Yes. Yeah, the first book is called The Paleo-Vedic Diet, which combines a plant-based paleo diet with Ayurvedic medicine and talks about the body types and how to customize diet for and lifestyle for your body types.
Okay. Wow. That's great. So, Doctor, before I let you go, if you look around today at the world, what's happening around in the world? What's happening on social media? What's happening? I'm keeping politics out of it completely, but I'm just talking from the lens of health and lifestyle and depression and suicides. And, you know, considering we're living in a world where, you know, we have more, so much more than the previous generations, but we're practically the sickest generation right now. So if you had like 2 to 3 to 4 minutes, you know, to speak to the world, you know, what change would you ask them to make? What change would you ask anyone to make in the way we live our lives today? You know, so we start looking more at a preventive model. And even if we have a condition, whether it's a cancer or it's an autoimmune condition, we can start. We have, hey, that sounds great. I'm going to use Dr. Akhil's point to start my journey right here. What would you tell us?
Yes. Yeah, I think a couple of things I think can make a big difference. One is our mindset and belief that we can get better, because I've had many patients tell me that all their doctors have told them their condition is incurable, they'll never feel better. And I'm the first doctor who's told them that you can feel better, because I think wherever you're starting, whatever you're dealing with, it is always possible to make improvements. And even if you can't cure your disease, that's okay. You can get into remission, which means that the symptoms become quiet, you're living your full life, not restricted in any way. So I think having that right mindset when you're beginning is very important, because it's so powerful, our beliefs and our expectations. And then the other thing which I see is really an epidemic of loneliness and isolation in my patients. It's very hard for people to keep up with, you know, their work and home life, and then time for those social relationships, because often what takes the place of that is social media, which is not really a good substitute for those human, you know, in-person friendships and relationships with real people. So I think that if we can work on improving interconnectedness and social connection, community, I think that would be really transformative for our societies.
Okay. That's great. Thank you. I mean, that's profound what you say. I love what you spoke about the mindset, because it's the same thing back here in India. A lot of people believe they have to live with it and there's nothing that can be done. And sometimes they make the smallest changes and they reduce the intensity or the frequency of flare-ups. And that itself is improvement. Doctor, yes. Thank you so much for this. Where do you consult right now? Do you have a private practice? How do people reach out to you if they need your advice? Or do you privately consult? Yes. We'd love to know about that.
Yeah, the best way to connect is through my website, which is drakil.com, drakil.com. Or they can go to thetigerprotocol.com, which will bring them to my website. I'm also on social media, all of the typical channels people follow, like Instagram, Facebook, and it's at Dr. Akhil, spelled out. In my practice, I only see people within the state of California because of state laws in the U.S., through my books and also online courses, which are on my website, I'm trying to reach a bigger audience that way.
Oh, that's amazing. We'll have all of these details put in the show notes. Dr. Akhil, it's been a pleasure. There's something so calm about you. I've enjoyed this conversation. I mean, you have knowledge. You can make out loads of experience, because that builds the conviction. And there's just this calmness that comes out of you, which is so, so warming. I really appreciate your generosity with the information that you shared with all of our audience, and would love to be in touch with you. Would love to keep in touch with you. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, Luke. Yeah, I really enjoyed our conversation. And it's great to see the work you're doing in lifestyle medicine and preventive medicine, because we all need to be working together to help help people.
Well, absolutely. I'm inspired today with this conversation. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you.
Awesome. I think we're on 3 minutes early, so you have some time before your next meeting. Okay. But it's a pleasure, Doctor. And when I'm down in California, we are probably doing some work with Stanford. We've been working closely with Dr. James Doty. I think he's a neurosurgeon with C-Care. So I was there in Jan and a couple of trips in the last previous 2 years. But I have your contact details, and if I'm ever there, I'll give you a shout out, and it'll be great to get a cup of coffee with you and understand further about your courses, because I'm very interested in your courses. I'm going to spend some time. We run an Institute of Integrative and Lifestyle Medicine, and I want to see if we can plug in or license some of those courses with what we do to teach people, you know, because it's an integrated way of teaching, and we constantly learn from other experts because we don't know it all, obviously. But truly appreciate your time. Thank you so much for doing this.
Yes. Yeah. My pleasure, Luke. Yeah, definitely. Let's stay connected, and then do let me know if you're ever in California and we can meet up.
Absolutely. It'll be a pleasure. Thank you.
Stay tuned for more. We're going to continue our journey, learning, sharing, and evolving.